Okay, folks, I guess we have most everybody, so let's begin. So welcome to the first CMM working group session that we have here in this GGF. My name is Fred Marcel, co-chair of the CMM working group. And so beginning by the formalities, by participating in the session, you have to abide by the GGF rules, which are there in the screen. And there's a list going through, and so please sign the sign-up sheet. Also, is there any volunteer for minute taker? Never. Okay, I'll take minutes. But I would like to warn you that I'm recording the whole session, so anything you say might be used against you later. Jamie, is this legally binding?
No comment. That's GGF turf. So.
Okay, but any blunder you say will be recorded for the rest of eternity. But anyway, the CMM working group is the only working group that gives you bonus tracks. So you can download this from the...
Bonus tracks.
Yeah, you can download this.
The good news is, since we don't have endpoints solved yet, although it's all recorded, you will never be able to find it.
Okay, folks, so let's begin. So this session, in fact, is an introduction to wisdom. And so just to start with background, so how did we get here today? So this working group, it was born in GGF 8, our BOF was GGF 7, then we were born in GGF 8 to do base manageability functionality for GSA. And between GGF 8 and GGF 9, that was around June last year, the specs started coming out in the Oasis Wisdom PC, and we looked at each other and we said, oh well, we're doing the same thing, so merger. And we went through the M&A activities, and then in GGF9 we decided to move our work to Oasis Wisdom. I mean, the marketing department says that we are doing a great collaboration for the good of the IT industry, but the engineering department says we threw all our work on them and then tiptoed out of sight. Then instead, what Dave Schnelling referred today as rechartering the working group, which was not rechartering, it meant that we started a gap analysis, or let's say to give a look at what's missing in manageability in OGSA and what we should do about resource models and everything. This, I'm going to present the results of this in the next session tomorrow. GGF10, in fact, in order to do this work of the gap analysis, we needed, first of all, to do some foundation work, that is to say, to solve the problem of what is resource management, to understand what is the manageability framework for OGSA, and so that's to serve as basis for the gap analysis. This is presented on GGF10. It's more or less the same contents I presented yesterday in the morning in the OGSA working group session. And finally, here in GGF11, we completed the gap analysis as much as we could. And as I said, so we'll present tomorrow. So, now in GGF11, so the plan is, this session will be, in fact, an introduction to Wisdom. So, Heather Krieger, co-chair of the Wisdom TC, will present us the specs. And so I'm planning to have today so generic questions and pleasantries and a very lightweight session without food fights, hopefully. Then tomorrow in the South Pacific Forest, so the same room, so I'll present the gap analysis results. And we have a little bit to do with Wisdom in the sense that anything that we need that's missing, and I'll point out a few things we can discuss. But I need to think with you in advance a few things. Then tomorrow, right after lunch, when everybody will be sleepy enough, we'll have the joint OGSA Wisdom CMM session with a deeper technical discussion. So food fights are allowed in here. Okay, so Wisdom in OGSA. I would like to begin by giving an idea of where wisdom is located in OGSA. So, just to have an idea, how many people didn't come to the Architecture 1 session in the OGSA working group yesterday in the morning? I mean, my presentation yesterday in the morning. Two people, three people. Okay, I'm going very fast through this just to make a short explanation. I mean, you've seen this figure for the last 3 months, so, okay. OGSA is composed of several capabilities: execution management, data services, security services, information services, infrastructure services, etc. And they provide all the functionality, the high-level functionality that you expect from a grid. So it's reservation, deployment, monitoring, etc. In the opposite corner of this, we have the resources, which are used by these capabilities to get work done. But they have a very different nature because, first of all, it's not a high level as the services. They have very native manageability like reboot, set VLAN, etc. They say, in the security services, you might be saying, okay, make me a VO. And down here at a network switch, you might be setting a VLAN or a partition or a zoning or something equivalent. So it's not exactly the same thing, but this functionality down here is an enabler for what comes up here. Also, they have all the manageability interfaces, SIM, SNMP, proprietary, JMX, etc.
Okay.
Yeah.
The high-level services are themselves resources, aren't
they? Yes, the services themselves are resources that you manage. So this figure, you always have this problem that the services here are also down there at the same time. I mean, this figure, in fact, since it talks about capabilities, we're not talking about services. We're talking more here, in fact, about interfaces. The right thing to say here are interfaces. But for some reason, the OGSA spec is saying services. So I'm just following what the OGSA spec is saying. But the CMM document, it says it divides things in capabilities and interfaces. And we put the caveat there that, okay, services is just an implementation or an instance that may have, I mean, first of all, you might have a job management service that has also a make coffee interface. So what is this? You know, so you cannot classify things by services. So this figure is a bit confusing because of the thing, of the way things have been named in OGSA. So I'm switching the blame from myself to the OGSA working group, of which I'm a participant. Anyway, okay. Yes, some of the resources down here will be interfaces. Some of the resources down here will be licenses. Some of the resources will be bandwidth. You have all kinds of things down here. Okay, so in between you have the infrastructure services, which is the essential glue between these two. They show the resources down here as services for all these capabilities here to use. So by doing this, you may use the same web services infrastructure for discovery, for introspection, and same methods to deal with the resources the way you deal with the normal services. And also it provides some common framework with some basic common functionality that helps you manipulate in the same way all the enormous variety of resources that you have down there. So, and this, for us doing management, the main thing is WSRF and wisdom, which is what we are today. So this helps situate where wisdom is in the whole OGSA manageability framework. So what is wisdom and what was CMM? So wisdom, as Heather will explain, is always this web service distributed management, and it is also the coolest acronym in the industry. And they're doing the management using web services and management of web services, which managed to be the most uncoolest acronyms in the industry also. So Moose provides a uniform way for you to access the manageability of the resources and a set of functionalities that are broad and general to help manage those resources. And, well, the details I'll let Heather explain. So for Moose, so what we want to use Moose here in the OGSA is as a way to access the manageability of lots of resources. And then Moose, the management of web services, so we plan to use it, as the name says, to manage all the web services that compose the OGSA infrastructure. So this said, so I'll pass the session to Heather, who has lots of words of wisdom for you all.
Okay, so I'm Heather Krieger. Fred gave a long introduction there. So I'm the co-chair of the Wisdom TC. We're a pretty big TC. We've got about 150 people on a mailing list, and then about 30 very active participants. So I'm just going to sort of go over history of the membership, what the roadmap is for the specification. I actually put at the end now. What our platform requirements are for web services. How we do management using web services, how we manage web services in particular, and our relationships to other standards organizations, including this one, and a roadmap, so you have some idea of the timeline of when things are rolling out from this TC. So feel free to ask questions all along. I won't promise to have answers, but... So Wisdom actually had a previous incarnation, which was a Management Protocol Technical Committee, and we decided after working on that for requirements for about a year that it had the wrong charter. So we killed it off and rechartered a new one called the Web Services Distributed Management TC so that we could actually invite the people who are very interested in management of the web services in particular, as well as management using web services. So Winston Bumpus was the chair of the Management Protocol TC, and he continues to be my co-chair in Wisdom as well. He's also the president of the DMTF, with whom we have a very close relationship. So right now we have a broad representation. We have lots of management vendors who are very heavily involved. We have device vendors. There's more than just IBM.
I just look at the sequences. application servers are listed here, which is very encouraging since they're the ones that are going to have to provide us the runtime for our management applications and our resources. And we also have customers like MITRE, who actually work through the government and are interested in using technology like this. So management using web services is basically taking what we have today for management applications and using web services as its distributed platform. And I'll talk more about why that's important and that matters. I'm probably preaching to the choir here. I was just really excited to be able to start up a presentation without having to do the triangle. So this is the first time I've done a presentation to a group that's been web services savvy, so that's sort of nice. We will use web services to describe and access resources for management purposes. And the management of web services is just a case of management using web services. This is how we manage the web service as an IT resource. So it's basically taking our manager using web services, their Muse model, and applying it to web services as a resource. Seems a little bit recursive, but it does actually help us in a lot of ways because it gives us an immediate use case we have to define every time we talk about it. So we do enable all kinds of management applications, and we have scenarios come up as we do discussions from all parts of the management industry. But we don't actually define any of the management applications. We don't dictate how they work or how they should use these interfaces that we define. But we do define how the manageability of resources should be provided to them. Right. So in order to do management using web services, if we want to actually provide an interface for manageable resources, You have to get a generic set of schemas and interfaces to do that. That's interoperable, at least at a very basic level. We also need to make sure that we can integrate existing managed resources into this environment. So we have to be able to use web services to wrap our existing infrastructures. Now, in order to do this, provide these web services interfaces, we have to have a distributed computing platform based on web services. This meant there was a lot of requirements when we first started out that weren't actually provided that we have to have now. And this actually enables the interoperability we need between managers and managed resources, and it provides us the runtimes we need for our distributed platform already existing from existing vendors like IBM, Sun, Oracle, and Microsoft. So we're very strong that Wisdom should not develop technologies that are not management specific. Those that are web services platform oriented or needs that we identify, we try to work very hard with existing communities to get those provided. But we will identify those problems, those technologies that are specific to the management problem or may not be as generally applicable. So basically, what we do is we say, if we take a look, well, I did have to have one triangle anyways, okay. So if we take a look at services running architecture, and we have services today in our service environments, and they are already talked to existing resources or assets in our business case. Well, we already take that same sort of model, and we have those services talk to existing resources in the enterprise using whatever native methods that they have available to them. So for some of our existing resources, they can talk web services upright directly. For example, if you're managing an application server, they might already have a web services stack available for you. Some other kinds of resources may not have a stack available to you. They might have existing instrumentation to existing agents, and we can talk to those agents in order to access the resource just as well as we can talk to the resource directly. What this means is that from the manager's point of view, he's actually talking to resources through agents like he talks to any other sort of resource. So he uses policies and service level agreements, he uses registries to find resources. We can manage web services directly using the web services interfaces. The little blue boxes are port types or web services interfaces on these resources. He could talk directly and manage an application server directly if he needed to. If he needed to manage a printer or a system that was managed through another agent like SNMP or SIM, the interface he would have for that system or printer would still be about the system or the printer, not about the agent. So regardless of whether he's talking to the resource directly or talking to it through an agent, the interface that he gets is about the resource, not about the agent. So in fact, the agent becomes transparent or encapsulated in the interface for the managed resource. Now one of the nice things about this approach is we can wrap our existing instrumentation. The existing instrumentation is preserved. This is not an all or nothing. This is web services providing integration again, just like we've done for other business applications. And the existing managers that we have out there based on SIM or SNMP can still continue to work with those agents that are already out there that you're now referring or providing the web services bridge for. So one of the reasons this is very interesting is it gives the manager a very consistent view of the resources is that when we use Blizzle to describe our interface, this is independent of where we say the location is to actually access it. So the interface of the resource is always the same, whether or not you go to the resource directly or you go to a management agent. All right, so just in summary, the web services architecture basically hides the traditional management agent architecture behind manageable resource interfaces and implementations. Managers always talk to the resource. And this actually provides a decoupling for the manageability interfaces using web services from how you access the interface. So we can actually, web services already supports multiple different kinds of bindings based on whether or not you're inside or outside of the enterprise. Get you lots of quality services, get you security, get you through the firewall. So we have options available to us there. Where you access the interface, so that it actually already provides distributed remote access. How it was actually implemented, what platform, what language it was implemented on, or when it was actually done. The Wisdoms and interfaces can be published along with the resource long before the management application actually comes along and needs to consume them. In a lot of existing management applications with proprietary methodologies, sometimes the resources have to be built directly into the management systems. So why do we want to bother to do this? Well, we need this manageability end-to-end. I think probably the grid space is probably especially needy of this. You've got to be able to go through the firewalls. We want to build applications that are across several businesses, across enterprises, use those resources to disclose those resources. So we have to be able to get through the firewalls, get across the platforms, and get between different management vendors. We don't have the luxury of having one vendor manage the whole thing, and so we need to start developing these standards to take up these challenges. We need a low entry point for the infrastructure, and we need to remember that the management is an application on a distributed computing environment. Okay, so when we say we're going to put management on distributed on a web services platform, what actually do we need out of that? Well, we need XML, XML schema, we need WSL, so we need WS addressing, we need the resource framework, specifically resource properties.
Sorry, can I interrupt you?
I was on a roll.
Last chart, I missed one of the points you were making was you made a lot of points on the abstraction that you provide a common, common interface across common, distributed, pervasive distributed infrastructure, et cetera. Did you make the point? I think it's also important to make the point that, this additional layer, why add this new layer, is that this new layer can actually add additional function and extend the capability of the resource rather than just provide, a wrapper that treats it as, a different form of interface on the same functionality. It is actually a place in which to extend the behavior of the resource and expose that resource as something more than it was when it was exposed in the underlying technology. Right.
So traditionally, we used to do that in the agents, in a proprietary way for every resource hitting that agent. Now we can do it in architecturally consistent way. So, so web services give us a good point here, a place to extend behavior in a more consistent manner. Wisdom is still looking at service group to pick up where I left off for collection support. We're using WS notifications and WS security.
So we'll also have to develop a set of management foundations. So we need to understand how to express that information. For management purposes, we actually have to have additional descriptive information about these interfaces, both resource properties, the operations themselves, the notifications, relationships. So meta information, I mean, is an operation out of code. Is the resource property readable? Is it writable? Will it change during runtime? Something that they talked about earlier today about the meta information that's missing right now from WSR. And so we have a lot of very specific cases that we need this kind of information. We also need to make sure we can define relationships between several IT resources. And we need to be able to provide a schema to express the relationship as well as interfaces in order to be able to access and understand it. We need a management event format, an XML format to carry the events from any source. That means that existing management event models like SMB vacations and SMB traps should be able to be carried over this XML format. We need to also take care of discovery. How do we find manageable resources? Finding resources just in general after they're already manageable resources, and then also introspecting the manageability capabilities so we can understand what they can actually provide for us. And this is especially a big problem for, not a big problem, it's especially a big issue for a management application because traditionally management vendors have done the discovery, grubbed around into the environment, finding resources and adding them to their topologies. That's part of the value they've provided. And now we need to figure out how to rub around, match them up to manageable resources either we provide or the vendors of the devices provide ultimately, and make sure that these things are consistent across the various vendors.
Is this discovery just information gathering, or is this active, that is, reservation of resources?
Did you say reservation?
Yeah.
Right now, we're looking to try to populate what manageable resources are out there, and we haven't really gotten to a reservation sort of discussion. But I wouldn't need to put reservation as part of a discovery mechanism. Okay, so in the future, we'll also need to talk about policy and negotiation as part of the platform foundation. We have quite a bit of work right now just to try to expose what the resources interfaces are. So, what's a manageable resource? I throw this term around a lot. It is a web service. It provides an interface that provides the manageability capabilities for a resource. It's described using WSDL, Resource Properties Documents, Meta Informations, and Policies. It's also a WS resource, as currently known, the definition of the WS resource. It must apply WSDL's identity capability. In other words, it has to have an ID, it has to have a name. Well, it doesn't have to have a name, it's optional, and it should have a version. But really, the only required field at this point in time is the identification, which is pretty lightweight. So at least we know it's out there, it exists, and we can tell it's not something else. Right. And then also, it needs to be able to advertise the properties and methods of the resource to be managed directly. I just really want to hit on this because the big difference between this and what we've done in the past is we've advertised the interfaces of the agent, not the resource, and that's the important part here.
I raised the same question at the feedback workshop in February that I think you attended. What is the status of WS Resource
now? WS Resource, WS Resource Framework?
I think it's WS. Well, what do you mean by WS Resource?
Okay, so WSRF, the specification, WSRF, Web Service Resource Framework, has a set of documents, and it defines the term a WS Resource. So it's something, there's a set of qualities that go with that. It has an EPR, it has resource properties, it's stateful. And so these things are actually outlined.
WS Resource and submitted to the WSRF PC.
Yes.
Hey, Heather, let me try that a different way just so I know how to say it right in the future. Is there a difference between the question, is something a WS resource, and does it comply with WSRF? Is that the same question?
It's a different question, because WSRF is a set of specifications, so there are some specs, like service group or lifecycle, that a WS resource wouldn't have to implement unless it's appropriate for it.
Okay, all right, but it has to comply with the applicable subset.
Right.
Yes, okay, got it.
What's the target for the wisdom aspect? Is that sometime in this year? What's the target here?
Yeah, I have a roadmap at the end, but we already have an 0.5 draft out. We're hoping for 1.0 in October or something.
I guess the reason I'm asking that question is more WSRF is a work in progress, and how can you possibly make any differences on those things?
So the agreement that WSDL came to is that all specifications that we depend upon would be in progress in a standards body when we went out with 1.0. We also had a dependency on addressing. And we'll do a 2.0 to take into account the standardized versions. So we'll identify either the input draft or interim draft that we're dependent upon for our 1.0 specification. So hopefully we have a close relationship with both those TCs, and so as we do things we think might be impacted by their future work, we'll try to visit with them and get some advice and counsel on how to go forward in a reasonably protected way. So, all right, so capabilities. We define the capabilities for resources. These are a set of descriptions that actually, it's a set of functionality or interfaces that enable management plans. It's not just a WSDL port type, it also includes the properties that are necessary, policies and meta information. There may be some behaviors that go with the capability that don't shine through the interface and are well understood or specified in WSDL specifications. So the capabilities we've discovered so far are identity, metrics, operational state, whether it's up or down, configuration, correlatable names, being able to understand if a resource is related to another one and how, and relationships. There may be new ones that we discover as we work down this path. This eye chart is just to sort of show the relationship of the manageable manageability resource, the manageable resource, to our existing web services. So web services today, we have a description for a service with an interface and an endpoint, and we have the same thing mirrored almost exactly in the manageability space, where we have a manageability service with a manageable interface, an endpoint, and a manageable resource, which provides capabilities.
Is that, will you have more details on the capabilities? Sure. In particular, I have a question on the interface.
I do. All right, so just sort of going through what capabilities we provide today, we have an 0.5 draft out, and just to sort of go over the capabilities that are in there, and we haven't picked up any additional capabilities yet. Some of these capabilities will need to be extended for 1.0, these are starter sets at the time. So for operational state, we came up with a very simple state diagram, available, unavailable, and degraded, meaning any state that was not definitively available or definitively unavailable. And available and unavailable were meant to not be partially so. In other words, it was a definitive state. If it was available, it was up. If it was partially up or not within parameters, then it's not in an available state. And this was to make things simpler for a manager who would not have to then introspect a bunch of substates and try to understand what they were, if the thing was up or down in the first place. So we have what the properties you actually get with this capabilities, current state, URI, the time that it entered the state, and a URI pointing to the state model that this resource supports. Now the state model at this time is not encoded in XML, right, but it is something we're looking at in the future.
Is there a clear reason why there is no transition from unavailable to available?
Tiago's question.
Yeah, Jay asked this. We were looking at this in an observation.
From unavailable to degraded? Don't you need to go to available first and then go to degraded? It might be pretty quick.
Yeah, coming up slowly? No, I don't know. I just asked if there was a crisp reason why, then I can take it home.
We can, probably not a crisp reason why. We can talk about it.
Maybe it's the becoming available space again.
Yeah, there are. There's always this discussion about are the interim states themselves. But we chose to take the tack that the state transitions were instantaneous and the interim states were actually substates.
Of one or the other.
Right. So for example, if you were going from unavailable to available because you hit the start button and it was in a starting state, then technically starting would be a substate of unavailable until it was up and then it would be available. So this was a very fun discussion.
I remember half of it.
So then we have standard operation start stop to go
through this. Jay, last GF, we had two questions. One is the missing transition, and the second would be the missing state. Let's say we have a degraded, which seems to be, I mean, more or less in this direction. We don't have a starting.
Right, we thought the starting was part of the unavailable state until it was actually up and available. So we're still sort of working on this. This is not CASNIST. The DMTF started up a state behavior working group to add explicit state behavior to the SIM model. And we're actually working very closely with them on this. So it's sort of developing in both groups sort of simultaneously. So when we get through, we should have a more consistent model, I think, with more input from them.
So did you say it's degraded changing resource attributes?
I'm sorry?
Is degraded a change in resource attributes? Is that how you model?
A change in resource attributes.
Like, for example, I didn't know if the person is lost or
something. I think it's probably resource specific what degraded means. Right? So you have to understand how the life cycle of a particular component maps to this particular life cycle. And in fact, that's what we did for the web services. In W3C, we defined the life cycle for web services, and then for Wisdom Most, we actually defined how that life cycle mapped to this generic. Okay, so we will have some additional work to do beyond the 0.5. We have to be able to get the add notifications. We have to add meta information on some of these states. We have to add an understanding of what the substates mean and how they work. And there may be some changes to this yet, including the name degraded, which is really, it's not really degraded. It's neither up nor down. So.
Red, yellow, green.
Yeah, red, yellow, green was much easier.
Yeah, and I guess based on the question here, these are really states that are associated overall with the resource and apply to any usage of that resource. For example, right, getting to Vasu's question, right, degraded could mean, right, that I'm not meeting a particular service level agreement in a particular context. Right? That's not what's meant here. Because if that were true,
it's
then
the
same
resource
that was being shared by multiple contexts could be available and working fine for one context,
right,
but not meeting its goals in another context.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So this really is properties of the resource,
yes,
not right the performance or availability or anything like that with respect to a given goal in terms of the context of the use of that.
Right.
And that's good. Also, we're not aware of that, but
But Jeff, have you heard Jay Unger talking about facets of a resource or not?
I have never heard Jay Unger talking about
facets. Facets, okay. But well, I mean, you'll just say we heard this. I mean, ad infinitum. But Jay, he is very concerned that a given resource might have several facets. There's say, a provisioning facet,
yeah,
a running facet, something else facet, depending on what kind of management you're doing on the resource. And that would translate to management language, to composability of interfaces, perhaps?
Well, or maybe capabilities.
Yeah, okay.
And this maps very closely with the idea that capabilities are there to do fit for purpose.
Yeah. So one question that I have for you is, each of these facets could need its own graph, state graph. For instance, is it deployed or not? Is it running or not? Is it something else?
I don't know that the state models would be facet constrained, but I would think more that perhaps there are some additional state models, right? To just right now, maybe they're talking about provisioning facets, so it's confusing. I think that there are probably provisioning life cycles.
Yeah.
Right.
Whatever
and
you call it.
The fact that there's a provisioning facet is orthogonal.
Yeah.
You know, the fact is there are additional life cycles.
But you know, you're really hitting on the question of composability and factoring of interfaces and state, right? Into you could think about the way that you just described facets as specialization or narrowing of the interface onto the resource for a specific purpose. And with respect to that, you know, we're going to have the same kind of composability and problems that we have, you know, when we think about inheritance to some degree, which is to say that common operations and common state models that might be useful across facets should really be factored into the base management resource interface, right, rather than exposed as part of the facet. So, you know, sort of thinking about that, so when you ask questions about state models, right, if a particular facet introduces a state model that's specific to that facet, that's probably where it belongs. If it's common across multiple facets, it probably should be factored in the interface resource.
Okay, which leads to a short question. So is it possible for a resource in Wisdom to have multiple of these?
It's possible for resources that have multiple state models.
Okay, great. So we solved one of the questions in the same working group document.
So is certain interfaces defined for certain states?
We have defined an interface for the operational state model. It could be that some states have interfaces associated with them, but we have not defined those.
Yeah, that's what it is.
So if we get into doing provisioning models, provisioning ones, so if we expand this lifecycle to include provisioning one, where you're actually doing configuration, deployment, and undeployment, you know, full lifecycle management, then it could be that some of those states have their own interfaces for deployment associated with them. But we haven't got that.
We'll let you get on.
Okay. This will be the question I've got.
Yeah, well.
Okay, so we're trying to define standard metric types and behaviors. This work already going on, we're doing this also in the EMTF metrics working group, so we're trying to leverage and work with that to come up with a consistent set of behaviors. Right now, every metric has its type, so we know what kind of metric it is, understanding behavior, the time scope, when it was reset at, and when it was last updated at. In the current graph, we only have two kinds of metrics. We have integer metrics and duration metrics with span time. Integer metrics are in a point in time, like a counter. Duration metrics are over a period of time. So there's also a property that goes with every the metrics capability base core type of this capability is current time, so that you can understand the current time as compared to the last time it was updated at, et cetera. So this sort of helps us with some time accuracy issues. We have resource-specific metrics in addition to that. We have no standard metrics that everybody must implement as far as counters or durations. Now, certainly we have specific metrics for our web service as an IT resource. We'll sort of look at those. And they're sort of predictable. Right now we have a reset all operation. We keep coming back to it and wondering if it should still be there or not. So we'll see if it survives to 1.0.
So what about composability as a matrix? Newer type of matrix coming from this matrix. Is that part of your scope?
Right, so then, well, hopefully we would define, so when we define the base matrix port type, right, you would extend that port type and add in your specific metrics that you would want to define.
So would that be part of wisdom scope or somewhere else?
If you have specific metrics, then it would be part of somewhere else. I think wisdom would just provide the base metrics capability.
Composability, you can talk about.
Metric aggregation, so how you, taking five values, how you calculate your metrics. Right now, that is not part of wisdom scope.
So your question would be, let's say, across five hosts aggregate, or across 5 minutes aggregate and give one value, right?
Yeah, average response time and post response time.
Okay, now I'm looking at Abdel's lamb
of thinking this.
This is something that then you can extend and put in the provider.
Well, it's actually something that
I'll talk to you later.
Okay. I think we had a discussion about it in wisdom, whether or not it was part of something that we need to define, and we really felt like the interface for us was the name of the metric you were exposing. How it was calculated, we don't actually advertise. And in fact, how it's calculated, that was actually part of the responsibility of maybe a metric mediator out there who would then have standard languages for how metrics are aggregated. And the resource maybe wouldn't have to be aware of this. Or advertise it. He's not going to actually do the calculation.
Or it may, in fact, or that aggregator may in fact be a different form of composed resource.
Right.
And then it should implement the same kinds of interfaces, but the semantic meaning of those metrics would mean that they have been correlated and, you know.
And the reason I'm bringing up is a different counter in WSA agreement. We saw the counter on this that someone from HP, Jim Brown, said, probably wisdom will cover this aspect of it.
For defining an XML language for metric aggregation?
Right, the compilation and all of that. But maybe not, and so we'll find it.
So right now, the group has decided not to attack with that.
I think Jeff's really onto an important point there, because if your system aggregation process works smoothly and comfortably, then you get metric aggregation as part of the definition of your new entity. And then you don't have metric aggregation as a separate concept, which keeps the whole model simpler.
Yes.
And so a really elegant solution, if it's possible, is there somewhere.
Okay. No, just to explain why I was asking my question, it's because in OGSA we have the information services with the producer and consumer interfaces with WSLAM. Is proposing, and it's not clear to us yet in OGSA what's the relationship between wisdom and the producer and consumer interfaces, because the two of them, they are targeting monitoring, for instance, among other things, of course. But we need to see the, I mean, not only, I mean, the technical aspects, but the role of each of them, and certainly the producer and consumer ones are at a higher level, but and wisdom certainly has its role, but the middle here, we still need to think about how to get these two together, and so that's one of the questions I'm asking based on that.
There's a lot of space obviously you can do just at the management level. I'm not sure if you're asking aggregation is something you can do. But as soon as we cannot do something, we can decide to publish this into an information system. There's lots of capabilities you can use it.
So,
exactly.
In fact, we have a scope for getting arrays of metrics or bulk data if you're looking at performance information.
So,
because you have all this overhead for every single entity you get out of it.
Well, we're using the resource property specification in WSRF, and they have the ability to get blobs of resource properties, and metrics are resource properties.
So is each metric wrapped around with all of this? So the entity metric is the only metric you have?
Well,
with the metric, you don't have more complex structures or arrays of as items that you can retrieve.
not directly as a property.
But you can define all this as notification bias and subscribe to an event whereby when suddenly when we have five of these things aggregated, a lot of
notified.
You can define all this.
Yeah,
it's not an assumption. But you would have to create
a different. I want to know about all the processes on the machine. There could be 5,000 processes, 10,000 processes on the machine. And I want to get the process, you know, what are all those processes doing? Or I have to download some aggregator in there that actually does some work on the analysis. But a lot of the capacity planning modeling tools suck the entire process address space about every 10 seconds. And that's what they base the capacity planning model on. So you either do something completely out of bounds of trying to manage this stuff, but you're trying to manage this stuff in bounds, so you should have ways of passing around the kind of data that
so we need both, and so I think what we'll be able to compose on top of this additional layer, and that layer exposes this which you want as a different resource or a different abstraction of resource. But indeed, we need it sometimes. It's not just an arbitrary program, but there's good semantics and specification of these things, like average or average of 5 minutes and things like that. And that's what these different specifications used to call it.
So I think that would be an intermediary collecting this information about the process. He returns those as a set.
You could run on the same node, because that's sort of the logical confusion in that.
Well, yeah, I mean, ZP can obviously do it out of bounds, but if you want to do it within the web services framework so that you can treat this as an attribute of your virtualized infrastructure, the problem with the out-of-band systems is that the machines they're monitoring being replaced, so they don't know, there is no mapping of resource. It's like reading machines don't know which disks their files are being written to. One of those stupid things, they just don't. There is no information about that, you know? So, that when you get these disconnects, you can no longer actually match the usage of the resource to the underlying utilization of the components of it. If you have to go out of bounds, so it would seem that there would need to be efficient ways to aggregate things, you know, in that. Because this looks like, you know, basic SNMPP1, which is not a great, even shown to not be a great, you know, way of dealing with it.
Well, when you say,
I might take that one on. This is a little better than SNMPP.
This is the only kinds of metrics we've got. We've got all the structure and then the instrumental
Let me clarify a second. This is 0.5. This is what was in a first draft to see if interoperability, get information to each other. We have a lot of work left to do on the metrics capability, including identify additional metric types and possibly metric structures and what kind of information needs to go into there. And we haven't done aggregators yet. I don't know if we will or not, but I'm certainly interested in your use case and to make sure that what we're thinking about.
Are people looking at the context of this rather than the framework? What is the informational context of the data we've collected? Is that a different group or a subset of people looking at that?
It's sort of part of just the use cases that we go through to try to do these things.
Yeah, part of where it's being applied to what management's purpose.
Right, as well as we get a lot of input from the SIM metrics working group and the SIM modeling
There are very few production performance management tools based on SIM because it's not actually, doesn't actually solve the problem very well.
So I would like to understand more about the problem, actually. Maybe I don't have a very good understanding of it.
Because one of the things that it might, I mean, there are kind of a couple of dimensions of the problem I think you're introducing, right, or suggesting to look at. One is, you know, you mentioned a scenario where a machine, you know, a machine has processes and you want to instrument, right, that group of processes, right? So you want to retrieve metrics or instrumentation about a collection of processes that are running on the machine. So I want to understand what it is about this, right, that would not allow you to represent the machine as a manageable resource and also a collection of processes and expose its own interface for
supplying the collection of metrics for the processes it contains, number one. Number two is that, it, which is a different dimension of the problem, which seems that I too am a little bit worried, Heather, about treating something like metrics as its own capability, or it's, you know, it's kind of like a vertical kind of interface instead of the metrics you get from this interface, right? Rather than, you know, suggest that each of these facets or each of these capabilities might have metrics in, on their own right. And, you know, it seems like we've got this horizontal versus vertical kind of capability thing going, and it's not clear to me that, you know, you'd want to put all of the metrics available
in
for a given resource
in
a given interface. I think something like this is more of a horizontal problem. And if you think about it that way, then each of the facets that might be introduced on a resource for a given management discipline might have a need for very specific metrics for that discipline, and that would be a way to organize, right, the metrics and the properties and the instrumentation for that management discipline, right, through that facet or through that capability, right, but not the metrics as
so all properties have a is measurable and they have a unit and metrics is.
Right. Yeah, so I think.
But just to summarize and say the three top level use cases, very generically, one is obviously form tuning systems. Generally, you need large amounts of information about the internal implementation of it in order to do the form tuning. Another one. Figuring out what the problem is, debugging, but using performance data to debug, or performance oriented tasks, which is when you see good performance data. I forgot what they're doing. But you know, there are some high level generics that you should be able to do in some way. A lot of these things get very confused. I've written some papers, I got a computer vision group conference, so it looks just like metrics.
Yeah.
And that, you know, there's a lot of concern. What do these things mean? How to get the data, and not being able to get at enough data to solve that data problem. And I've also seen, and, you know, framework after framework, which is definitely constructed, didn't actually deliver any useful information to me.
How much I need to
make it aware somebody comes up and all the efforts put into building the framework.
What's
and I'm not effort put into what is the data the framework's getting to you, I can actually do something.
And I appreciate that. That was what I was actually trying to get to the second comment I made, which was you really asked a question about who's focusing on the content, mm-hmm. right, the actual semantic meaning of the metrics. And I firmly believe that will be management, you know, could be management discipline specific, although it could be some shared type metrics, as you point out, for different types of disciplines. But it's probably not the case that level of definition I wouldn't expect to be done in wisdom unless
but we need to enable that level of definition.
Yeah. So I mean I think we're gonna
can easily get in the way.
Yeah.
And prevent it.
Okay. So yeah. So I mean it's the same question I think that we need that Fred, you know, we've talked about the context of CMM and OGSA mm-hmm. as to where the line is in terms of what the work that Wisdom's doing with respect to the actual specialization or the realization of specific types of resources, right, that Wisdom is not doing, and where that work occurs with respect to, you know, OGSA, Wisdom, and DMTF, mm-hmm. and potentially even other places as well.
So exactly.
We have to start answering these questions.
I think one comment I'd make on the Wisdom DC is one of the things we traditionally or we run into regularly is we start going down paths like you're saying, well, let's make this set of requirements. And as soon as we start making that a set of requirements, then we've now said to everybody who ever instruments with Wisdom, these are things you have to do, and then we step back and go, but we can't expect everyone to do all of those things, right? So we always come up to this sort of, you know, enable, you know, do not prohibit, you know, do not prevent kind of things, because we have to, you know, we have to allow for this thing to be used in ways we haven't even thought of.
Gentlemen, just a process check. We're two-thirds into the session already. So why don't we continue the presentation, and then if we have the time, we go back to the discussion, or else we do the discussion on the corridor afterwards, if they still have ice cream down there.
Okay. We can talk on the next day, because it's morning.
Or other quality checkers.
I have to run anyway, but I was probably going to believe me.
That would be great. Okay, so those are the capabilities that we've been working on. 0.5 was pretty limited in our release, both as far as the content of each capability and the number of capabilities. We wanted to put out enough where we could sort of test that defining things in web services using existing toolings and runtimes, we could be interoperable. Based on the specification we had. And we did have the interoperability of that, which was very successful. We were able to show interoperability among about 5 different vendors in an afternoon, so that went very well. So, and now we're actually working on 1.0. We'll add lots more capabilities and functionality to the existing ones. So management of web services is based on management using web services. So we take those technologies and techniques and base interfaces. And then we say, what is the specific manageability model for a web service, and how do we now develop the web service interfaces for based on that? So we actually based our initial work on the management task force working the W3C under the web services architecture working group, where we had done states, metrics, and endpoint understandings for manageability of web services. So for the 0.5 spec, we have identification, which points to the actual web service being managed from the manageability service. A set of metrics, how much time has been used in order to service this web service, number of requests, number of successful requests, and requests failed. We also have operational state was matched from the W3C state to the wisdom state. The W3C also defined request state of web services, request processing, request failed, kinds of things. So it's interesting to understand that state lifecycle of a request, because there are very interesting places where you can put metric counters, et cetera, and understand when the request is moving to the system. And we haven't addressed that one or integrated that one for web services, not the
answer. Just a quick comment. It's a beautiful example of what we were just thrashing for a while. Because as soon as you went to web services, all of a sudden your management domain model narrowed down. You could define the metrics. You have an information model associated with it. And yet all the other stuff is completely generic. And so, to have this at least as one of the subtypes of management user is actually a good strategic development technique. I know that's not the necessary reason we did it, but it works.
Well, it's actually been very helpful because it makes us be concrete in a hurry.
Yeah, good.
But sometimes we get a little recursive, and that's bad. And sometimes we stray when we're defining management using as management of, and we have to be careful to pull them back apart again. But I think it's been good for us anyways.
So, can those be in terms of user identification or things like that? I mean, how many operations can you identify?
Say
it
again,
I can't hear you. You have things like number of requests and service time.
These are for the resource. These are for the web service. These are not user-based or view-based statistics. At all.
There's any number of things you can come up with, we can come up with more. But you'd like to carve it up by time of day, by IP range, by geographic location, and the answer is we can't do that at this level, but not to say that somebody can't. And there are ways that we've thought of in terms of if you wanted to come up with your own metrics of how you might subscribe
right.
to information that would then provide that level to you.
Right. So again, what you're saying is that this is the overall set of instrumentation, identification, et cetera, for the resource across all usage contexts.
For this resource, whatever
right.
this resource
yeah.
is, which could be a usage context in its own right.
Could be. But if it's shared and you really want something based on, you know, its use in this environment or by that user or across this path or whatever, then that's an additional context that's not provided.
That's correct. Right.
And so how will that be actually? And will you be defining a new resource on top of this? Or
you and I are going to do that next week. and I'm away next week, so.
Okay, this was just to sort of show the relationship. I talked about capabilities at a general level for management resources. And to show that what we did for a web service was say there are specific capabilities for a web service, and they extend actually the basic capabilities. So,
and now the question of the previous slide where you said mapping between the WPC state and the business state. What is the WPC state?
We did a state model for web services, a lifecycle state. So it was basically available, unavailable, and then we had some sub-state diagrams that are available, unavailable. I actually took those out of my backup trip. So, did idle up? No, it was up and down. And then we had idle and processing. I can't remember the state off the top of my head. Terrible. I used to be able to recite it like that.
That was part of the
W3C Management Task Force work. And it was actually put out as the W3C node. So we started with that, and then we mapped it actually to the Wisdom host.
I think if you go like W3C side and type in WSLC, you'll find it.
Okay, just to show that the capabilities extend from the common base capabilities that those have to show. All right, so the roadmap. So we had initial contributions to Wisdom from HP contributed web services management framework, IBM CA Cloud Boxes contributed WS manageability. We had another contribution from IBM called the Common Base Event. Actually, that was from IBM CA Cloud Boxes as well. And then, we actually put out an 0.5 specification using, you know, input and ideas and content requirements from all those contributions. In April 2004, we did interoperability testing. We just went over the contents of that spec. 1.0, we're hoping for October 2004. We're going to extend what we defined in 0.5 with the events for each of the capabilities, what events need to be issued. What the standard events look like, and meta information that we need on each of those capabilities is not there today. We'll need to extend operational state. We'll need to extend some metric support to understand how we do metric grouping, et cetera, context around some of the metrics. We'll need to define relationships and configuration of them.
So extend operational state, you have already identified issues that you need to address.
Yep. So I guess it's extended a bit. Finish. So we sort of stuck with the very basic of 0.5 because we were really after seeing if this stuff would actually work on another code. Yes, Jamie?
I've got a question for you. If there are upper limits to the scalability and extensibility of these methods, I'm not aware of them, but what I'm trying to figure out is how to interpret the lower limits. Is there something somewhere where people can point to a discussion or express an opinion about sort of what's the lower end of the use case of the complexity of service aggregation requires these methods? I mean, is the claim that all these attributes are of utility even to two simplistic services that meet in the night one-off on people who never talk to each other again? You know, sort of, I'm trying to get a feel for the range of the use case of use cases that to which these apply. And I just don't know the answer to that. I mean, you know, two guys hooking their telephones up to a 1960s decoupler doing EDI transaction. I'm kidding, of course, I'm glad I won. But you know, how simple, how complex do you have to get before you start harvesting the benefits of that methodology?
Well, so we sort of, that brings up a good point I haven't actually said, and that's the composability of this stuff. I've talked about a lot of capabilities here, and everything is composable. The only one that's actually required is identity on the identification capability. All the other capabilities are composable, and you compose in as much as you need, even of those capabilities. They're composable. So it's not an all or nothing deal. You don't have to have a lot of complexity. If you happen to provide an implementation that doesn't require some other specifications that we may need, then certainly those are not required in implementation. We're trying to keep even the dependencies as composable as possible.
I'm surprised that discovery isn't done on this. What happened to discovery?
I should have had discovery on this.
To get to, I think, another aspect of our question you raised is that we wrestle all the time with, so Heather talked about
you know, the ability to compose and incrementally mix in additional capabilities to the management resource so you don't have to buy off on everything. Right? And you've learned that lesson again and again. Okay. The other dimension of that problem is, in terms of just being really practical about it, is when do we decide, when is it appropriate to decide to represent open source, right, with these interfaces in the first place? Right? How much wrapping do I do, right, in a given system? Right? What's the granularity of the resources in a system that I actually want to express in this way? And it gets back to the use cases, I think. It gets back to, you know, if I have some management discipline that I want to enable and interoperable and, you know, federate across, you know, multi-vendor kind of approaches to do a certain level of performance management or provisioning or whatever, those use cases are going to have to drive us looking at, you know, the granularity of the resources that we want to express in this way. Right? Because if we try to express every very fine grained resource in the system like this, you know, people will call us insane and they'd be right. So we wrestle with this granularity problem all the time.
Well, not only do we wrestle with the granularity problem, but we wrestle with the fact that how much do you, so you have a resource that's maybe capable of runtime configuration, but you just don't happen to be interested in enabling that to some manager. And what you're really interested in is getting your provisioning done. So you can enable your provisioning, you'll leave the configuration until you have a business case for it.
Yeah.
Just because you have that doesn't need you, mean you need to expose it until you have a business case for it. So we also hope that the management systems will provide a lot of their initial wrapping, and then the devices will contribute their own wrapper.
But yeah, absolutely. So it really does get to the point where just, I'm probably not making this point very, very well, but we have to draw the line at some point across various standards groups that are working in this area, and this is especially important here at TTF with respect to OGSA, is to define that level of abstraction, right, that will enable certain management tasks or management applications or management disciplines, and treat that as, right, from that point up, right, as the architectural model for what we're trying to do. And everything under it we treat as implementation, right, of that model. And where that line, where that abstraction is what we tend to wrestle with. So, you know, it really, we have some work going on in OGSA, as you know, to define a set of use cases, right? If there's other work going on, right, to, you know, to describe and bring forward certain management use cases, right, scenarios. Maybe we should be collaborating on those a little bit more. And I think that's the only way we can start to get a handle on what this level of abstraction is, where it started. And I would suggest we need to start between, if we had a choice between finer grain and coarse grain, let's try coarse grain first, right, see how that works. And then if we need to drill down and represent more resources in the system for some purpose, you know, at a finer granularity with this, we can.
Is there a systematic process for vetting the abstractions against the use cases and when they're implemented? In other words, when you get done with the implementation, have you tested against the use cases and provide a proper set of around it?
Not at the point where we are now.
Where would we put in a recommendation on that? And some of the design methodologies I play with, we use the use cases and we try to make the implementations traceable back to them. Do we have a mechanism, or do we need to recommend that?
We don't have a mechanism today.
It's possible to do, okay, because we're doing that in the OGSA working group too. We're planning to come back at some later stage and cycle through the use cases with respect to the architecture we configured. And you can put it on your work plan. It's harder to tell with developing a standard as opposed to a software product how you actually do that testing. Okay, it's much more in the process of creating the standard in reference back to the use case.
Is it worthwhile thinking about developing test plans that would include that kind of vetting process?
and if we were doing extreme programming, you know, mm-hmm. doing tests before you go get code and implement it.
I think a lot of that stuff is captured with the interop type.
Yes.
Yeah, I
exactly.
I really like the thread you're on, but I think that, again, if we had some kind of theme, like if we were going to say we were going to do some level of some kind of performance management, right? And we had some things in place where we could actually define service level objectives in some form for, you know, to get, you know, some performance management done. And then we could drill, use that as a theme for a drill down to say, okay, we need these resources, right? And these are the interactions, and this is the instrumentation, and these are the policies we need. We could set up an interop, right? And have multiple vendors come in with different pieces of this and put it together and see if it works.
Okay. The other problem is that for any use case, you only take certain aspects of that use case. And you could skip, say, everything else is up to the something else. You know, just the way when we talk about metrics, aggregation, etc., we said, no, that's not part of this, somewhere else. Until you show how that somewhere else gets done, I don't know whether we can do the use case or not.
Well, at this point, we have an internal analysis scenario. We have a document with all the messages of this change. So that essentially was a test case that we run. Now, the scenario there, the testable scenario, is fairly simple. The reason is, once you start saying, well, let's do performance management, let's do that, right? Different products do it in different ways. There are different, you know, things that you can do. But it's hard to write a use case scenario all tested, right? So you can, on the other hand, you can focus on something simple to enable compliance to the standard, right? And drive, you know, drive your use case from there. So that's what it is.
Okay.
So, but it's not a formal process. I think I felt like you were looking for, is there a formal process for taking our scenarios and use cases, doing the spec, doing the implementation, circling back very specifically to the scenarios and use cases. And right now, you know, the circle back that we did have the interop event was, let's keep it simple and see if we can make it work. So for 1.0, right now we don't have a very strict process in place for doing that.
It also, I think, perhaps begs the question as to whether the use cases are concrete and specific enough so that you can actually test them and make sure that they work.
Yeah, at this point, they're not.
Sure.
Okay, 2.0, probably in about a year from 1.0. The biggest focus there is to try and take in the standardized versions of the other specifications, assuming everybody delivers on time. There's some additional manageability things we might want to tackle, time policy into our work, looking at provisioning what we need to enable for that. But these are strictly candidates and nothing can be agreed on at this point.
How about the aggregators that say, like they have in Wismuth, that say you, with one command, you manage multiple.
Managing collections.
Yeah, collections. Yeah, collections.
Yeah, so collections is something that we're actually looking at.
Is it the 1.0 or 2.0 or?
Yeah, we'll probably have to deal with 1.0.
Oh, no, okay.
We've been looking at what's in WSRR as a starting point.
A clarification on the use of WS notification. Is it just for the delivery, I'm assuming it's for the delivery of error messages?
It's the delivery of any event that the resource wants to surface,
whether
they're error
messages.
Or not.
Not
right, so there'll be change, resource property changes, message changes.
Okay, so whenever there's a state, or someone's interested in a state change,
state
resource
changes.
X,
yeah.
Use WS notification.
So we'll have to define a set of standard events as well as the topics that they'll be published on so people know where they're going.
So that being 1.0?
Yes.
Okay. That's why I was asking.
Okay, so relationships, we are related to everybody else. If you find somebody we're not related to, we haven't done our job. In the W3C, I actually have a chart for each one of these, but I'll just run through them real quick. In the W3C, we use Wisdom, the description working group. We took a lot of our initial requirements for web services management of web services from the Web Services Architecture Working Group, as well as all of our concepts and terminology. From the DMTF, there's an interop working group there that defines interoperable ways to access SIM object models, and they are actually looking at defining rules for mapping from SIM to web services interfaces. And right now the decision has been to go with the Wisdom technology based on how they do their mapping, or what they do with mapping. There's a utility working group which is defining profiles for resources that also have web services interfaces based on the rules defined by interop. And there's a state behavior working group which is defining some state concepts for the SIM model that align more closely to how Wisdom has been looking at capabilities, so that the SIM model and the Wisdom work align much more closely as far as explicit state models for resources. Right now, they're sort of buried all along the model. The DMTF SIM model is a premier customer for the work we're doing in Wisdom. If we can't express the SIM model in web services using Wisdom, we have failed. So this is required. Now, Wisdom does not require the SIM model. You don't have to provide the SIM model. But it is one of the premier models we must ensure is representable in web services. Other models are also representable, like SMMD and some of the most advanced sensors using SIM anyways. So GGF, obviously, very close relationship.
So let me understand what you just said a little bit more. You're saying that Wisdom, the work we're doing with Wisdom, ought to enable representation of SIM resources.
SIM model resources.
Right. Even if it's not desirable to do so. I'm wondering whether or not, you know, again, I'm out of my league here. I don't know enough about this, but it seems as though that, again, we want to be careful not to limit ourselves just to representing some existing model in a different way, but to actually use this as an opportunity to refactor or do things a little bit differently, right, if there's a need, right, and to represent underlying resource models, right, with all their flaws, right, to learn not only the good stuff, right, and bring it forward, but to learn about the stuff we kind of like to leave behind. It's not obvious to me that all aspects of SIM model, right, should be or could be represented in the stuff.
So the rules defined by interop will not be this classical. They're not going to be straightforward mapping of the entire model into one service per class, right? This is not the kind of thing you're going to see. What we need is sensible rules for providing mappings, making judgment calls about when things go over into a web services interface. And I think the utility working group is going to provide the guidance we need for making sure that this mapping occurs smoothly.
And it's going to be more along the lines of what we're starting this on this single where we actually are pulling together a higher level set of component interfaces to represent a logical manner for other resources.
Yeah,
so it's not just surfacing component interfaces.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
And it's not the only, so for Wisdom, it's also not the only model that we need to be able to support. Right? So we're not dependent upon it, but it's a primary use case.
So if I stated that a different way, then what you're saying is that the interfaces, the message exchange patterns as defined by Wisdom, the resource property projections, if the interop from the SIM model cannot represent, if the interoperator has trouble representing the SIM model through those sets of resource properties and message exchange patterns as defined by Wisdom, then Wisdom will have failed.
And then Wisdom will change.
Right.
So that Wisdom will be
successful. Yeah, and I was what I was trying to do is just get a sense for that. I mean, those are pretty strong words. It will have failed.
Well, no,
let me be extreme on the opposite end.
Change, which is
to say that sometimes you can hand me a legacy problem, right? And I'll say that's not the solution. That is the problem. So if all I do is take the problem I've got today and reflect that right to a different technology.
Yes.
Right, so I want to be sure that you know we're actually building the right thing.
Right. So what I was trying to get across with the SNIA and SMIS stuff was that if you looked at the velocity of change requests that went into the SIM model in response to that work, it was tremendous.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So I would expect nothing less.
Okay.
So SIM
is not sacrosanct about it.
No. Right. So SIM is changing the effort into work groups just to handle what was going on and wisdom and the thoughts going on there. Make sure they integrated right into SEM, and likewise we're having to make changes and adjustments for metric behavior, et cetera, so that things line up very well. Or at least the mapping is a little bit intuitive.
So you were on the point on the OGSA?
Yes, we have a relationship with the common manageability model. can I actually go to that chart?
Which God allowing and the other directors allowing will be a design team of the OGSA sooner or later.
Mm-hmm. So.
So we're hoping that the wisdom specification will be usable by OGSA and other working groups as basically an ability model for researchers.
Right. So I think what we, additional work, unnecessary work on all of our plates, but what would really be good is to kind of formalize these relationships in terms of the responsibilities, roles, and responsibilities, mm-hmm. right, with some real examples, right? So Fred, if we took something like some of the execution management service stuff,
mm-hmm.
right, because, Andrew gets up and shows, this is a job. Right, and that's a manageable resource. Right, so what do we really mean by that? Right, is that a derivative of a set of wisdom interfaces? Right, that have been specialized with specific content to represent a job.
I certainly hope so.
And, certainly hope so.
Right, and further, right, does CMM own? I hate the word own, but own the definition of job. Or does execution management services own the definition of job, or does some other standards group own?
Okay, definition.
The specifics of this resource, defining these resources for specific purposes.
Yeah, the definition is very tricky because what I've been talking around is that we need two things to define this. I mean, wisdom is, let's say, the rendering, how we get to the job, right? But to define what the job is, we need two things. One, expertise on what a job is and what it does and what the attributes are.
Yep.
And second, expertise on modeling things in general. I mean, not only jobs, but, whatever.
Yep.
Okay. And that expertise is here in the DGF, and this one is not.
So I hear what you're saying, I think I agree. So
who owns it?
We got to start being able to do here is expressing right the output of each of these working groups
mm-hmm.
in terms of, for example, a job, right? To be able to describe that not as a job as a whole, but the specific interfaces or the specific facets of a job manageable resource mm-hmm. that are appropriate in support of EMS. Right? Mm-hmm. So that this composability can happen, so that we don't get into this trouble that says, no, the GGF guys own the job. Right? What they might own, right, is a facet of a job management mm-hmm. resource that allows that job to participate in some management discipline. And
absolutely
those are the
right.
documents we have to start writing, we have to start being articulate mm-hmm. about, the interfaces and the capabilities of such a thing, rather than suggesting that the overall thing is only one piece.
So dealing with, taking a component interface view of this, right, it says that I'm not necessarily, I don't own the thing, I own just an aspect of the interface that relates to my domain of expertise.
Yes. Where wisdom owns, right, the base, right, interfaces and facets, capabilities, whatever, right, for expressing common aspects of manageable resources. And then we allow...
Instances are created beyond that.
Right. Mm-hmm. This is one big composition problem across multiple standards where there's a set of...
Exactly, and multiple standards of bodies. Exactly.
We're developing an enormous distributed architecture here across three standards bodies.
Yes.
And six times as many companies.
It's pretty impressive.
It's pretty. Yes. Either that or delusional.
Yes.
All good ambitious efforts require a bit of delusion here and there.
You referred earlier to extreme programming. Well, we're doing extreme standards here.
Absolutely.
Okay.
That's your time signal, isn't it?
No. Do you have anything else?
Well, I have a question.
What do you think about the infrastructure earlier?
Morning.
So a web service that is managed, and it just installs a message and comes in. Those managed messages do not have to get sent to the same URL as the actual service that is managed.
Of course. Precisely.
Very sure. Nothing like a simple question, Sean.
I like that.
Yeah.
So I think we have a session tomorrow where we can actually have a food fight.
That was a really fun discussion.
Just one thing, Heather, you didn't, I was waiting to get this, you didn't mention any spark tape or mouse that goes to the W3C cell phone.
No, modems and mutes come out at the same time, same schedule, with the same set of capabilities. So where we define mutes, right, identity, configuration, then we define the same exact capability for MOS for the web service.
But isn't MOS a separate specification?
They are separate specs. They are separate specs.
Okay, I didn't see that in your...
Well, I said Wisdom 2.0, which encompasses all the specifications necessary.
David, you were saying that?
No, just what the time is again tomorrow?
Okay. There are two sessions tomorrow.
8 o'clock was
CDLL.
Did you mention that? There's actually the CDLL.
CDLL, yeah. I didn't mention.
CDLL. Which isn't on your list, but that's.
I can't pronounce
point.
It. I can't say it.
It's
an
8.
Okay.
So, outstanding. There is a CDLL session tomorrow. I don't know the room, and it's not here in the slide. It's on first in the morning tomorrow.
It is Nautilus 1.
Nautilus 1. So, I mean, before this session here, we have a joint session between the CDDLM working group and Wisdom. I'll be there. Then tomorrow at 10 a.m., there is the CMM working group gap analysis result presentation, in which I'm going to point out a lot of things missing throughout the spec and lots of open issues, and so how clueless and how incomplete we are. And I'll be wearing a bulletproof suit and a spacesuit underwear, so please bring your tomatoes. And finally...
Fred, do you want the Wisdom people to come to that one?
Without ammunition, please.
With pleasantries?
Yeah. You might show up, certainly. Okay. And finally, tomorrow at 12:45 after lunch, we have the OJSA Wisdom CML joint session, which, seen by the discussion we had today, so it should be pretty interesting. One. And we don't have a fixed agenda yet for what's going to be discussed there. But, for instance, one of the candidates are, I mean, what Wisdom needs from OGSA. I think you had a few requirements or questions of that? No.
Well, we can have that discussion.
We can have the discussion, and vice versa, and see if all the pieces are really coming in place together.
So I think identifying some of the use cases that we expect you know, or the usages that OGSA expects to be able to do with the wisdom work would be really valuable. I don't think that we as a group have a good feeling for how you think what will be used.
It wouldn't hurt just to push down on that job.
Yeah, I think that's
okay. Without going into detail about what the job is, how do the management things that we all normally think of when we think of our NQF system for job management map onto the wisdom sort of interfaces. I would be a delightful comment.
And I think given that one, we might be pleasantly surprised at, you know, because it's really not all that coincidental that OGSA group has been steered, right, towards
wisdom?
Yeah, and towards, you know, towards a factoring that would exploit,
yep,
right, these manageability
interfaces. Mm-hmm. So, actually, we're just going to see what that's like.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, I guess that's it. So, session adjourned. Thank you very much for coming. A big hand for Heather. Sign up sheets. Well, I did nothing. I mean, thank Heather.
Hi, Richard Nicholas. Jeff.
Yes, that wasn't actually mine.
You're just playing with it.
Yeah.
Good to meet you.
Yeah.
I think I've seen a long way.
Yes, it's not worth trying to do it.